Hello? Hello? This is Harvey Ferguson.
Finnegan,
sorry. I forget. And you're listening to The Boop Show. I'm told it's about video games. What a waste of your damn time.
Hey, it's the Boop Show. Some gaming news you can use for February 2nd, 2015. I am Scott Johnson. Some of you have emailed in and said you like it when I sing the opening theme. And I'm inclined to consider at least the notion that you're crazy, that you shouldn't like that. Because it's only, well, it's more than slightly irritating. It's really irritating, isn't it, for me to do that? It annoys me. I don't even know why I do it. It's annoying as hell. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. It's good to have you here. It is the Boop Show. If I sound tired, it's because I ran twice today. About 3.5 miles total, and I am pooped. That's not like playing video games at all. Whew. It's good for you, though, right? It'll make me stronger, bigger, better than I was before. Hey, listen to this. Been playing Wind Waker again. Man, to fall in love all over again with a game I haven't played since 02. Well, 03, I guess, is when I played it. It feels really good. That game is really, really pretty on the Wii U, and it's shockingly so. Didn't quite expect it to be so visually appealing. I already thought the style they used... Hang on. The chair's being weird. I thought the style they used was pretty neat at the time, but I didn't realize how well it would translate when you up the res on that and put in a few, additional effects. But mainly you just scale that stuff up. It just holds up and is a further testament to this idea that Nintendo makes games that don't get old. I mean, they don't fall apart after time. Like, nobody's pining to go play Battle Arena Toshinden or... the first Splinter Cell, or I can't think of anything else at the moment. But none of these games are like ones where you're like, oh man, I cannot wait to go play this classic the way that Mario games do. And they hold up in ways that you just don't expect. I mean, playing the original Super Mario Brothers is still a treat and still fun and feels immediately retro, but also kind of holds up gameplay-wise. It still has what it needs to have to be an entertaining experience. I think all the Zelda games qualify in that way, except maybe Majora's Mask. I know some people love that game. I don't like that time mechanic. I hate it. But for me, things like Ocarina and this game, graphic overhaul or not, it's just a treat to play. It feels like home. So I'm real happy to be doing that. But you might think to yourself, hey, Scott, you've sure been talking a lot about that Wii U over the last couple of weeks since you got it. Do you think you could talk about some other games you're playing? Well, sure, why not? I don't mention some of the usual stuff. Like, I raided Warcraft yesterday. I play a lot of Diablo to the point of just, it's kind of ridiculous. Like, why would I keep bringing that up? But I do. I love it. But I've been playing quite a bit of Super Mega Baseball on the PS4, which I know I mentioned here before, but I've had some more time with it. And it's great. If you've got $19, I think it's totally worth it. Again, the art style is not doing it for me. I know I talked about this at length. I won't bore you with that again. I think it just, I don't know. I don't like the look of it. But man, the gameplay is great. And this throwback to kind of old school baseball games feels really good to me. And it makes me not want to play simulation ones. I'll probably come back around on that. But given the option, this is the way I'd like to do my baseball. And really all sports games for that matter. I don't care if you're trying to make it as realistic as the sport. To me, that takes it away from the whole point of it being a game in the first place. I know there are, people out there that want that experience, but I want fun. Otherwise, I'll just go watch a game. I'll just go watch a football game, a basketball game, a baseball game. I don't need to have this ultra realism in both mechanics and visuals in my game. And you know, I was reminded again this weekend watching the Super Bowl. I'm like, you know, playing Madden anymore. You may as well just watch the game. Give me a football game with like fake teams and big headed idiot dudes and crazy stats and stuff. Give me something like that. Give me Blitz again. Give me NBA Jam. Give me Super Mega Baseball, as it turns out. Shockingly good game. You guys should really try it out. Sony Online Entertainment. You know them as SOE and have for some time now. They swooped in there and grabbed the old EverQuest, snatched it from the hands of the original developers, made them very rich men, continued to support it, and then introduced a ton of new games and never put anything on an Xbox. Well, breaking news today. Sony Online Entertainment sold off by Sony and renamed Daybreak Game Company. Daybreak Game Company. Let that roll off your tongue. These are obviously the developers of EverQuest, PlanetSide, DC Universe Online, soon to be released H1Z1, which is their sandboxy deal, has now been sold. It's an investment firm in Columbus, Nova. Oh, that's the firm. That's not where they're from. Columbus Nova is the firm. And the developer will now operate as a sort of independent game studio under a very different and new name, Daybreak Game Company. You know, it's a little bit weird because I live in a community here called Daybreak. So it's kind of throwing me off personally, but I'm trying not to let that affect how I see this story. Quote, "We are excited to join Columbus Nova's impressive roster of companies," says John Smedley, president of Daybreak Game Community, formerly SOE. They have a proven track record in similar and related industries. We are eager to move forward to see how we can push the boundaries of online gaming. We'll continue to focus on delivering exceptional games to players around the world, as well as bring our portfolio to new platforms, fully embracing the multi-platform world we all live in. It's kind of their way of saying we don't have to be Sony exclusives anymore when it comes to not PC. One of the devs tweeted today, I meant to write his name down, that he was very excited to be developing for Xbox One. So they seem, you know, excited. Also, those jobs are saved, at least it would seem so. They say they will continue to work on H1Z1, EverQuest Next, EverQuest Landmark, and other game projects that are already started. And I guess now that they're independent of Sony, they can do all the Xbox stuff they want or whatever platforms they want. So I think good for them, I think.
Hey, Scott. This is Nate from Northern Illinois, a proud supporter of the Frog Pants Network. Just had a question. I guess this could be for the Boop Show or Current Geek. You mentioned that with Windows 10, Windows 7 users are going to be able to download it as well. I'm like you. I like Windows 7. I'm not a fan of 8. But 10 looks pretty sweet. So I'm just wondering, is there any tricky stuff that we have to do with that? I mean, do we have to put something on like an external hard drive or back it up? If so, is that pretty simple to do? Because I'm not extremely savvy. I know some stuff. But I was just wondering your thoughts and tips and tricks on that. So love the show.
Always best to back everything up before you do anything. So that's kind of a general rule of thumb. I often risk it anyway, but it kind of depends on what you're using that PC for. So in my case, I have a dedicated bunch of stuff that's all like combination of Mac and a little Linux thing here and there to run the podcasting side. And I play, I use my PC, my gaming PC for almost strictly gaming. I really don't use that PC for much else. Some streaming and some other stuff, but I don't have any like important documents on it. I don't use it for any kind of important business stuff. It's just for games. And as a result, I'm not that worried about doing an install over the top of 7. So that's what I'll probably do. And if, in worst case, you know, if it sucks or something bad happens from that and it's best for me to do a fresh one, I can still do that. It just means reinstalling a lot of things and, you know, it's not that big a deal, I suppose, just time. But if it depends on how mission critical your PC is. Also, I would probably be one of those, if it has any mission critical stuff happening, I would maybe wait a week or two to make sure that all the review sites and everybody's kind of had their way with all the core features to make sure that giant show-stopping bugs aren't there to murder you. But assuming all that's okay, should be fine. I'm going to get it right away. I'm so happy that it's free. I'm happy with the stuff they've been showing. Pretty stoked to get it on my box. And I'll, of course, talk a ton about that when that happens. Oh, looky here. Octodad, Dadliest Catch, that game, has reeled in more than $4.9 million in gross revenue. That's pretty crazy. That's in a year now. $4,902,945 to be exact. And that is about 500,000, just shy of 500,000 units sold across PC, PS4, Mac, and Linux. Why did I think that was a tablet game also? I must have dreamt that. Also, I thought it was on Xbox. I don't know why it's not. Anyway, this is Young Horses. That's the name of the developer. And they say 61.1% of Octodad copies live on the PC, while a 32.6% live on PS4. Mac has 5.5%, Linux 0.08% of copies sold. They're very happy with those numbers. And also keep in mind, it was never a PlayStation Plus free game. So it's this is all, you know, people have purchased this. I think they did well. Having this thing show at E3 in 2013, I think was a huge boon to the game. And a lot of people want to play it. And once you see it, you kind of laugh your head off and then want to play it. So I say good on them. The gameplay didn't hold up for me long term. I didn't love that game. I like the concept. I think it's goofy as hell and funny. But I didn't exactly, you know, it's not like I walked away going, man, best game I played all year. But nonetheless, they deserve props. They did a good job. So good job, guys. Make another game. The Ouya got a $10 million injection of money from Alibaba. If you're not familiar with this company, this is a huge Chinese conglomerate, bigger than anything in the world, that out Amazon's Amazon, that out Apple's Apple. It's just huge. Big e-commerce company. They have invested $10 million into the Ouya as of last month. This, according to the Wall Street Journal. We'll call it the Wall Street Junior. 99 cents only, the Wall Street Junior. Now, a Taco Bell. Bong! Anyway. So, yeah, they're going to keep that going. I guess the Ouya, I mean, it did all right. It did good on Kickstarter, of course, $8.6 million over there. And since has not done much, but and nobody really is that thrilled about it. I know a few people use them in some kind of cool hackery ways, like a nice little meme box and things like that. But I guess, you know, this Chinese company, Alibaba, having some interest in seeing it grow will help that thing grow. I still have zero interest in it.
This is Nicolas Cage. I'm calling because you're talking about...
Nicolas Cage? What? Hold on a second. It can't be the real Nicolas Cage.
A Mario lot recently. I love Mario. Growing up with Mario. But I realized the dichotomy between Mario games. You got the 2D Marios and you've got the 3D, you got the 3D exploration Marios. Do you like the 2D platform linear Marios? Or do you like the Nintendo 64 go and explore, find the star kind of Mario? What Mario would you like to be next? Would you like to be the more linear kind of like Super Mario World? You know what I'm talking about. But I'd love the show. Do you think that they should make the new game like the 64 or like the new one, the 3D World? Goodbye. And I love the show. Goodbye.
All right. That guy's awesome. I like you better than the Nicolas Cage we're all familiar with. So here's the deal. I like them both. I love them both. And I don't think the 3D exploration-focused Mario games, N64, you know, Sunshine, 3D Land, Galaxy, and all those, I don't think they're that different than the 2D ones. The obviously, the space you move around in is a lot different, but really it's kind of the same thing. You've got to complete a course, and that involves jumping and platforming and stuff, still better than anyone does any of that, to get to the end and get what you need. To get that star, that shine at the end is not like it's hidden or something. You know where to go. I think they have a lot more in common than you're giving them credit for. However, obviously, they do fundamentally control differently and have very different mechanics. I love both. I think Super Mario World is a classic and one of the best 2D platformers ever made, period. And I think that these 3D ones are amazing, too. I have a very special spot in my heart for N64 and moving forward, mostly because that game just proved and did it in one fell swoop before the rest of the world even figured it out, that you could indeed do this, that you could make a game like that, bring it into the new 3D space, introduce analog control, and change the way games work. It was that fundamental and that seismic. It's a huge deal at the time. and still is. You just don't know it because so much time's passed. But yeah, they're all good, and I love me a 2D experience as well. Those 2D Mario games that are out now. What is it? Super Mario Brothers Wii 1 and 2, and then Wii U, and then the Luigi 1 or whatever. Those are good too. Although I think they have been less creative with those. I don't think that team is their A material necessarily. But could they do another amazing two-dimensional sort of focused Mario game? Absolutely, they could. But for me, I'm all about that 3D, no trouble. Steam has paid out a bunch of money, $57 million to creators. People making hats, people making stuff, outfits and global operations, or offensive rather, Team Fortress 2 stuff, Dota stuff. That is about $38,000 average per creator. Obviously, that's not truly happening where it's all being split equally. Nobody's becoming rich off of this, except Valve. But $57 million paid out is pretty good. That's pretty good. That's 75 different countries around the globe, and that's a chunk of money. They have plans to have curated workshops for Dungeon Defenders, Eternity, and Chivalry, Medieval Warfare, and new tools to make it easier for people to make and sell their stuff. So if we all wondered how that was going to go, turns out it went all right. Don't forget to nab Transistor for the PS4 this week. Got an email today. Somebody complained. This is, by the way, for PlayStation Plus, so it's free. And that's why I bring it up. But somebody emailed and complained that Sony is not doing any AAA releases on the PS4. That the bigger value right now for them is PlayStation 3 stuff. And I kind of agree if you're looking for AAA titles, but it's not like there's some conspiracy here. It takes a while to build up that stable and to have enough older, quote-unquote, older AAA titles in the backlog to then offer them as PlayStation Plus freebies on a month-to-month basis. They've had those. They've had a few, but they don't have as many because the console's only a couple years old. That's going to take a while. Sony's dipping into, like, you know, four or five games, years worth of games for their most recent things that they're putting up there for free. So I know there's a tendency to want these free things to be some hot new release. That's not how they've ever done it, except with some indie titles. His complaint was too many indie titles. And I would say, you're smoking the crack, buddy. Love me the indie titles. Minecon is returning in 2015. This is the Minecraft conference. It was in Vegas 1 year. Then they skipped, went to Florida or something. Right? Didn't it happen in Florida? Or maybe that was the plan, and then it got yanked or whatever. Anyway, now this sale's totally done. Freaking Notch has moved to LA in his giant mansion. Minecon is returning in 2015 and coming to London this summer. It is scheduled for July 4th and 5th in London. So all you Americans, get out of here for the fourth weekend and go spend some time in the enemy territory. The people who made it so we had to have a 4th of July in the first place. I'm just kidding. I like those guys. Anyway, Mojang announced it today. They're kind of running it, I guess. Tickets go on sale this month. 10,000 Minecon 2010 tickets will be sold in two batches of 5,000 the same day. The exact time and date will be announced soon as to when you're going to get it, probably in the next couple of weeks. And if you want to go, you can go. The first unofficial convention happened in 2010 where they had a small gathering of 50 fans. They got together with Marcus Notch Person in Bellevue, Washington. In 2011, they put their real weight behind the event, had 5,000 attendees in Vegas. Then the 2012 event, which was, that was Paris Disney Park. I didn't realize that. And that had 7,500 attendees. And then the one in Orlando also had 7,500 attendees. My guess is this will be a big deal. So watch for that. And as a reminder, Microsoft bought the damn thing for $2.5 billion. So really, this is kind of Microsoft's plan. This is their deal. Ooh, go party with Microsoft.
Hi, Scott. This is Jen from Virginia. I've been listening to the Boop Show for a while now. I'm calling to get your comments and thoughts on the beneficial effects on the brain of playing first-person shooter games. I listened to a TED Talk and heard an interview from a researcher who was showing that playing these games increases certain types of vision, can increase the person's ability to track multiple objects across the field, and they have other benefits. I think her name is Daphne Bavalier. So anyway, I'd like to hear your thoughts and your comments, and thanks for the cool show.
Okay, that good question, and I hope some of you heard it. That was pretty muffled. I don't know if that was your phone or if you were in a can somewhere or something weird. But anyway, that came through a little weird. But the idea that FPSs and other Twitch-based games, I can't say Twitch anymore without thinking of the streaming service, Anyway, games that are, you know, quick reflex type games tend to improve your memory, your reaction time, your reflexes, all that. I don't think any of this stuff is new. I mean, maybe what's new is they're doing more studies about it, but I can tell you that my hand-eye coordination improved when I was playing a lot of Quake in the 90s. I know that for a fact. So it's not a shock. And I think, you know, they always talk about old people, keep your mind fresh, redo your crossword puzzles or whatever. I think for our generation, it'll be keep playing your first-person shooters, unless it's all VR at that point. But yeah, you know, like being really good at StarCraft, really good at a shooter, I think actually benefits you in ways that we don't even understand yet. Not entirely the giant waste of time that our parents would have us believe. John Madden, or his game named after him, Madden 2015, correctly guessed the final score of the Super Bowl over the weekend. It's all, I mean, I was with a bunch of sports fans, and I liked football a lot, and I'm enjoying it on the same level they are, but I'm the only one that knew about this Madden thing, and I made this big deal out of it, and everyone in that room looked at me funny. But it's true. They had picked the Patriots over the Seahawks 28-24 in Madden 15, and that is exactly how it turned out. Obviously, the plays handled a little bit differently, and there wasn't that real stupid thing at the end that freaking Seattle did to lose the game. That was not in the simulation. However, that's how the score worked out. So props to EA and Madden for getting it right. Now, 9 out of 11 attempts is the current record. 9 times out of 11, they get the winning right. It's rare they get the score right, but this time they get the whole thing right. So good job. Let's see. There's an article. There's stuff floating around about Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo getting a bigger stronghold potentially in China than they've been used to. And China is sort of opening up to console business a little bit more. I think that's really good news. And I wanted to mention this just as a point of reference for, I mean, okay, look, China, giant market, a very untapped market in a lot of ways. And it means a whole heck of a lot if these companies can score over there. So if China's opening that up, loosening those restrictions, and there's a lot of details about what those restrictions are. You can go look all that stuff up. It's kind of boring. But the exciting bit is, hey, more games in China. Some real games made it on the scene of a Law & Order episode, Law & Order SVU, which is still going on, I guess, that kind of brings up Gamergate or evokes it in some way. I haven't seen it. But anyway, they also showed, they have a game called Temple Tap, an iOS Android game, which is just, you know, whatever, Temple Run kind of game, and it ended up on the show. So that's cool. In February, you'll be able to see this thing. It's an episode called Imitation Game and a classic ripped from the headlines Law & Order style. It takes on the subject of online harassment, says this Polygon article. In particular, as it bubbled up to mainstream consciousness in the late summer and the fall with Gamergate campaign. In the show, a woman game developer about to launch her first game is targeted by a stream of online insults, imitation, and death threats from male-dominated gaming community, unquote. According to one write-up, she refused to delay the launch. The cost must level up to protect her, and that's in the show's official description. I think this sounds terrible, and I say this because I've had experience with SVU. They did a terrible episode about MMOs. Did you guys see that? It is the most shark jumpiest damn thing I ever saw, and I quit watching the show because it was that point I went, oh my gosh, you didn't know anything about the subject matter. You literally just phoned this in. It's terrible, and it makes me so I cannot take any of the cases you show me from here on seriously. I guarantee it's going to be like that again, you guys. It's going to be bad. Pro or anti-Gamergate, I don't care where you stand on that dumb issue. There's no way SVU gets this right. It will have a bad effect for both sides of this argument. Are they still arguing? I don't know. But it's just going to be bad. It's going to be unrealistic. It's going to be silly. The fact that there's a couple of real games being shown, that maybe is a step in the right direction. But do yourselves a favor on Netflix. Go back and watch that terrible MMO episode and with me cry tears of hatred. Let's see here. Oh, Turtle Rocks Evolved. Okay, you know they're doing Evolve, right? Let's go, four of us go kill the giant monster game, right? That's coming, that co-op game. Played the beta. It's good. They released a match three puzzle game for it, and it blows. Don't play it. It sucks. I think it's lame and also ran and not very good. I just wanted to give you a little PSA. Blizzard will add Heroes of the Storm characters, quote, forever until we're sick of it, unquote. Well, it's going to get much more definitive than that, I suppose, unless they get sick of it real soon. But they told the PC Gamer this. They won't do it, or they won't stop making maps and characters until it becomes stale. It's kind of a strange thing to say, because then who determines when you get bored of it? Well, whatever. They are calling it an online team brawler. They refuse to call it a MOBA. They've been doing that for a while. 33 heroes culled from franchises like Diablo, StarCraft, and World of Warcraft. And they're adding another six or so internally. Yeah. He says, we're just going to keep adding heroes forever until we're sick of it and stop at that point. There's no secret number. There's just no number that determines, or sorry, there's just a number that determines when we launch. So, hey, whatever, man. Blizzard doing their thing. Let's do a couple emails real quick. By the way, your phone calls, which you've heard a few here today, come to us at 801-471-0462. I tell you all the time, I'm telling you again, use it or lose it. 801-471-0462 or boopshow@gmail.com. You can send your attached MP3s or just regular old emails like this one from Joe that reads, hey, Scott, I agree with you on parents having a say in what video games their kids play. It's not just having a say. They have all the say. I just want to make that clear right up front. I'm not saying they should have a little say or some of the say or half or 75% or 80% of the say. They have all the say. That is your job as a parent. If you think that somehow it's okay for your kid to play GTA, your decision until they're 18. It's your call, man. If you think it's something in between or they should only play Elmo games or whatever your stance is, that's on you. Nobody else. Anyway, I started my daughter playing when she was about 4 years old and only let her play Mario, Party Kart, etc. and Lego games with me. She is now 8 and we've moved up in games and now she always wants to play Hyrule Warriors and Minecraft together as well as Mario and Lego games still. To make it so she would not be exposed to some of the more violent games that I have, I will either wait until she goes to bed and play or play on the weeks I don't have her. When I'm at a friend's house when I'm at friends' houses, with her and his son, I guess that's the friend, wants to play Call of Duty, I have asked if they can play something else since I don't want her to see or play it. I have talked about her violence and video games issues, and she understands that it's not real and that it's just a game, but I'm not going to wait until she's older to introduce games like Tomb Raider or Uncharted. Love the show. Keep up the great work. Boop, Joe. Well, Joe, that's exactly what you should do. And honestly, some of the bravest things a parent can do is see a kid in a situation and still stand up for the thing you think is right for your kid. It's not always right. Not every parent is right about whatever decisions they're making, but it's still yours to make, and you've got to make them with gusto. I think you're doing it the right way. But I do think there's an opportunity there. If somebody else is, here's what's going to happen. She's going to end up at someone's house and they're going to play a game that is beyond what your scope is for her to see or be exposed to. It is your job to have that conversation with her, but not to just block it, damn it, demonize it immediately, because that will just lead to her wanting to get away and have more of it. I always use this example, but I was around, had a big family gathering, when my girls were real little, they and their cousins were all goofing around, and one of them said the word sex, and everybody laughed and giggled, and one of the grown-ups came by and freaked out, scared him to death, you will not use that word in this house, you will never use it again, I can't believe you said that, everybody separate and you're in timeout for a while, that was basically it. And I remember going, ooh, that is not how I would handle that. Because all you've done is created this giant curiosity target for the kid, and now they're going to go learn it through sources that aren't you. So wouldn't you rather be the one that helps them understand such things as, oh, I don't know, sex or violent video games or where to be careful when driving or what kids what kind of friends they want to have or what do you do in a situation where somebody tries to get you to smoke pot when you don't want them to do that or whatever. Wouldn't you rather be the one in it to win it with them and have them trust you and listen to you? So I guess what I'm saying is don't just make it seem like a horrible thing. Make it seem like an important thing and then talk to them about it and why. And you'll be fine. And you already are doing this, so I'm not really talking to you, but everybody else out there, hear my voice. All right, Chad wrote in, says, Scott, How the hell have you never played Mega Man? Oh man, the Mega Man games were the hallmarks of the early life of gaming consoles. How, holy cow, man, you should go try Mega Man X. It was originally on the SNES, and it was super good. Also, there was a Kickstarter game by the original creators. It's called Mighty No. 9. This is true. And looks like an awesome version of Mega Man with sweet graphics. Boop, Chad. All right, Chad. Okay, I'll play it. I'll play Mega Man X. How about that? Is it X or 10? I don't know what it stands for. I just didn't play Mega Man games. So those are my thing. I don't know. I didn't like the little dude. I didn't like the little Mega Man. And the old art for the SNES one. You guys remember that horrible thing? That awful art? That guy that barely looks like Mega Man? It's like somebody saying I never saw Star Wars or something. I know, it's shocking, but I just didn't play it. It wasn't part of my gaming arsenal. But I will. You have my word on that. When? I don't know, but soon. Matthew wrote in with our final email and says, hey, Scott, just wanted to throw in my two cents about Flight Sticks and Elite Dangerous. Or as the kids are calling it, apparently, E:D. I started off with a mouse and keyboard, trading almost exclusively. Switched to a HOTAS X52. That's HOTAS, all in caps. I don't know how you say that. And at first, I hated it. The controls didn't seem to be as exact. It was way harder to take off and land. And with the bulky trading ships, it was just a pain. However, I stuck with it because everyone online was saying how great it was. After a day or two, I suddenly clicked, and now I can never go back. I personally find that I have much better control with the ship with a flight stick and throttle than I ever do with the mouse and keyboard. Just took some getting used to. I also think this is going to come down to preference. So I agree with those saying, try a cheap one or borrow one before you buy. Boop the show, though. Boop, Matthew says. I still haven't decided what I'm going to do. I mean, first I need to plunk down the $70 that game costs. Whew. Why is that game so much money? I mean, it's not even finished, right? I mean, they're still adding things. Which I know, I mean, actually, I want that. I want it to be continually updated. But 70 is so steep to me for digital download. Am I wrong in this? Am I the only one that feels like that's too much money? At least it feels that like it's too much. There's no way I'm the first guy to say that. It just seems expensive. Anyway, hey, look at this. We're done. Boopshow@gmail.com is our email address. Please use it and keep that number handy, 801-471-0462. I love your calls and would love them to keep coming. Frogpants.com/boop. Is our website address. Our website address. Come on, Scott, what are you doing? Living in 1994? Is that what's happening here? On Twitter, @BoopShow. And as always, you can support us at patreon.com/frogpants. That is much appreciated. All right, before I leave you, got another Blair's App review coming up. But before that, some music. I found another. I like the Mario remixes. I know that's. I seem a little heavy on that, but I like them. The music's iconic. Those are easy for me to get into it. And I like this one. It's really different. It's not all techno-y and like Ravy for once. It's the Super Mario Kart Koopa Nova OC remix edition song thing that comes from Mario Kart, which I've been playing a bunch of, so figured it would be appropriate. So I'm going to play that now. We'll be back on Thursday with a brand new show. I hope you guys will come on back and listen now, you hear? And I hope your team won yesterday. Bye now.
Welcome to Blair's App Review. I'm Blair Canfield, and this week's app, Clash of Clans. After seeing the Super Bowl ad with Liam Neeson, I figured it was time to review the app that never leaves my home screen. And in this app review, I'm going to explain why I think everyone should give Clash of Clans a try. First of all, Clash of Clans is a cross-platform game. It can be played on both iOS and Android devices for free, and whether you play on either device, we can play together. Clash of Clans is what happens when you combine a real-time strategy game like StarCraft with a tower defense game like Kingdom Rush. You start by building a base, complete with walls, archer towers, cannons, a barracks, and army camps. All buildings in Clash of Clans can be upgraded, and in that sense, that's pretty much the goal of this game, to upgrade all of your buildings to max level. But in order to do that, you need resources. You have two main resources in the game, gold and elixir. A third type is introduced later in the game called Dark Elixir. How do you get all those resources? Well, besides waiting for your collectors to give them to you, the best way is to gain resources is to steal them from other players. I'm talking about war, baby. One of Clash of Clans' most exciting mechanics is being able to attack other human players' bases. You use troops like barbarians, archers, goblins, giants, and wall breakers to break into enemy player bases and steal all their golden elixir. Once you're in a war, you simply tap on the troop you want to deploy and tap where you want to deploy them. There's a lot of strategy involved in placing troops, because once they are placed down, they have a mind of their own. Once you build a clan castle, you're able to join a clan. Clans are a great way to meet new people and share troops with one another. Also, your clan is able to start a war against another clan to see who's best. I find people's biggest concern about Clash of Clans is the amount of time that they are required to wait while upgrading buildings, as well as the push to use gems to finish building those upgrades faster. But one thing all players should know is that you don't have to pay a dime for anything in this game. Gems are found frequently and awarded from achievements. I play Clash of Clans on a casual level. I'm at a point where upgrading a building takes about 10 days each, but it also takes me about 10 days to earn up the resources to upgrade another building. When my troops are ready to fight, I log on. While I'm waiting, I play other games. I check Clash of Clans about as often as I would check my email. All in all, my biased self gives Clash of Clans a 9.5 out of 10. Feel free to tell me what you think or tell me a game you think I should review by contacting me on Twitter at BlairCan. That's all I have for you today. Until next time, happy gaming. Boop!
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there! We'll be right back.